I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. It is 25 years since the spectacular release of Jurassic Park, the story done by Spielberg with a cast you all recognize about recreating dinosaurs, in particular one group of dinosaurs, in order to entertain visitors to an island, Jurassic Park. However, at the time, there was much speculation. Could it actually be done? Did we have the technology, the knowledge, to use DNA recreated in some fashion in ancient samples? In particular, this was amber with a fly inside of it. Did we have the technology to actually make dinosaurs? There is new speculation by a man named Max Hodak. He's partners with Elon Musk. They co-founded the neurotech company Neuralink. You pay attention when Musk says something because, after all, he's going to Mars, and at the same time, he builds really good cars. Charles Pellegrino, my colleague of long standing, is here because Charlie worked very early on with speculation about DNA. And I come to Charlie now with this talk by Neuralink that it is possible to go forward and not just recreate dinosaurs, but several generations of dinosaurs, so they become larger and more scary-looking. Perhaps 15 years of breeding and engineering. Charlie, a very good evening to you. First of all, Musk always gets our attention by overstating the obvious. He says that he can do Jurassic Park, or his colleague says they can do Jurassic Park. They just need the time and the money and the technology. What is your opinion? Because you've worked in this area long before Jurassic Park was made, and you've seen the evolution of DNA technology these last 40 years. Good evening to you, Charlie.
Good evening. Well, there's methods that are on the horizon now where, with the right kinds of amber, where the cells of a dinosaur, bit of dinosaur flesh in the mandibles of a flesh-feeding fly, where they would deeply penetrate it, and we'll be able to really map out the entire genome of a dinosaur if we get the right pieces of amber. Oddly, many of those right pieces of amber come from across the river from Manhattan in New Jersey. They're 95 million years old, and we already have the flesh-feeding flies under refrigeration. So it's a matter of we're there now. We're able to read DNA. We've got a genetic Rosetta Stone, everything from humans to Neanderthals to nematode worms. And so we can now see what regulator RNAs would do the right things in embryonic development. And it's not building a dinosaur from the basement up, because basically today about 80% of the two-legged dinosaurs, the theropods, you'll find that running around today in emus and ostriches. So it's a matter of when we can read the DNA and translate it, and we can find from other living animals the right snippets to put into the egg of, say, an ostrich, and basically biomorph it into a dinosaur.
Once upon a time, Charlie, when you were a young man, when we were all younger, Charlie, you were in New Zealand working on the speculation about DNA. What happened, Charlie? Why was that a controversy that now is just speculation by Musk?
Well, first off, computer technology was controversial at the time. If you had a computer that was 16K, that was a lot at the time. And I was talking about, terabytes, trillions. And people in 1982, in May of 1982, were saying, no, that's impossible. Computers will never have that much memory to store the genome of an animal. And meanwhile, you had terabytes, when that's what went into making the first really popular, computer animated cartoon, which was Toy Story 1. And now we're way beyond that. So one thing, it was looking ahead and seeing that the computers would exist, seeing the technology like micro-MRI, where you could chart every hydrogen atom in a piece of amber and then reconstruct what DNA might be preserved with that bit of dinosaur flesh in the amber. So the technology is pretty much getting here now. And at the time, I said, well, you know, in 30 or 40 years, we'll have this. Terabyte computers will be commonplace. People didn't quite believe it at the time. And then I gave a lecture at the National Observatory. Oops, the church lady was in the audience. This was a woman who we actually, in 1991, became kind of friendly. But in 1981, 1982, that was a big oops, because I had, in one of my lectures, used the expression resurrecting the extinct. And so some evangelical types got very, very angry about all that. In fact, when I left New Zealand and came to the U.S., one of the first things that happened was Jerry Falwell burned my book that introduced that, just burned it in public on TV in a garbage pail.
Let me understand what the controversy was. You were speculating in the early 1980s. This is long before the digital universe, long before there was a world before iPhones. There was a world before Macs. Yeah. There was a world before email. You were speculating that it is possible to take DNA samples, such as they do in Jurassic Park, where they take a fly inside amber and extract DNA of a dinosaur that fly is chewed on millions of years, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of years before. That's the Jurassic Park fiction. You were speculating that that would become possible. Is that what you did?
Right, right. I came up with the recipe for how to do it and then began lecturing about it to people. I used to give guest lectures at the National Observatory, the Carter National Observatory in Wellington.
And so you were speculating.
It got me in a bit of trouble.
You were speculating about resurrection. Did you talk about dinosaurs? Did you talk about humans?
Oh, yes, specifically dinosaurs at the time, yes.
And
one of my main interests was that if we can really read DNA and understand it, because at that time, DNA was really like Egyptian hieroglyph. We could read some of it, but we had no such thing as a Rosetta Stone. That would require storing in computers the entire genome of, say, a nematode worm and comparing it to a mouse and comparing it to a human. And that was all considered science fiction at the time. And one of my main interests in it was that the technology that will get you to the point of being able to really think about recreating dinosaurs or woolly mammoths or what have you, along the way it will give you the knowledge you need to cure many, many diseases. In fact, I carry something, a tongue twister, called ankylosing spondylitis. And we now know that part of that gene complex can control and beat back cancer.
The resurrection idea, that was the marvel of Jurassic Park. So let's bring it back to where we are today. The proposition by Mr. Musk's company that they can do this. What's between us and a T-Rex? Are there years between us? Is there a technology we need? Is it funds? What are the obstacles, Charlie?
There is one bit of technology we need, and that would be to really be able to rapidly scan without destroying the amber itself. Kids in high school do an experiment in creating amber almost every day around the world, which is using Canadian balsam, a type of tree sap, to preserve cells on a microscope slide. And that was happening naturally to many of the specimens that we have from New Jersey. And it's in those samples where the cells were completely penetrated that we will be able to, without breaking it all apart and destroying it, to non-invasively read the DNA, reconstruct the entire dinosaur genome in a computer, and then compare. And then we'll be able to see, okay, these are what we have in an ostrich genome or an emu, these large birds, and then see what's different from what we have in the amber. And a lot that's not running around in the ostrich or the emu, it's running around in other animals. You might take a part from a crocodile and that it's still preserved and still running around today, and then you can.
We can do all that now. Correct. We can do all that now.
We're getting pretty close. I would say maybe within 10 years we should be able to do it.
So the speculation by Mr. Musk's partner is not just to get publicity. It's that they see that in front of them are steps, as you saw in 1981, 82, there are steps to be taken that are logical and that will, I mean, the DNA studies have accelerated the last 20 years of my reporting, the ability to recover ancient DNA or to recreate pieces of DNA in order to ascertain our archaic ancestors, for example, and how we interbred. That's accelerated. So you're saying the acceleration will continue. And then, Charlie, you must have commented at the time in 1981, and certainly you've thought about it since then. What about the, let's put it this way, what about the philosophy of recreating an ancient dead animal? Is that wise?
Yeah, Jim Powell, who I worked with at Brookhaven, we talked about, well, what do you do in the early 80s? What do you do if you can bring back a dinosaur? And he said, Dinosaur World Park, New Zealand, because New Zealand does have the climate that you had then. It's isolated. The big worry is, well, what about diseases that people would bring from modern animals over to New Zealand? You can protect all that. It was, what do you do with dinosaurs beside letting them loose in the halls of Congress? Well, Jim Powell is the one who said a dinosaur world park. And then we were on a radio show in California, KFI. The host was Joe Kroom. And we were on with Michael Crichton. He was working on a screenplay that would become a novel. And, when we were talking about a world park, it hadn't yet become news that they were working on this Jurassic Park. And Crichton and Kroom and I were talking, and I said, but the big question is, just because we might be able to do this, just because we can, doesn't mean we should do it. I was at the time more interested in the parallel medical advances that would come with the technology.
I'm speaking Charlie Pellegrino.
That ended up in the film.
That Charlie Pellegrino, we're speaking on the anniversary, the 25th anniversary of Jurassic Park, but I want Charlie to stay because I'm going to turn this from dinosaurs, which are scary and exciting, and we see movies and we give Academy Awards to people who recreate them in some fashion on the screen, either with projection or animal models. However, when we come back, let's talk about recreating archaic human beings. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.
Experience the Tony-nominated play, What the Constitution Means to Me. It's a hilarious, hopeful, achingly human play that imagines out loud how the Constitution will shape the next generation of Americans. See the play that New York Times hailed as not just the best play on Broadway, but also the most important. Don't miss What the Constitution Means to Me, January 26th through the 30th at the Bushnell. Tickets at bushnell.org or 860-987-5900.